Sykes 7. You had just mentioned the Camel airstrip in North Russia.
The Camel airstrip was at a place called Lumbushi. It's all right. The Camel airstrip was at a place called Lumbushi, about 5 miles in the forest, there at the end of a little rail line. It was very small, and we liked to be as light as possible at takeoff. I also felt that we were not at war with Russia, and I didn't want to take part in any fighting, and there were no Russian planes to attack us. So I always took off without any ammunition in the guns, made the plane lighter for takeoff and lighter for landing. And I carried bags of leaflets. And when we went over on these raids, I flew low over the villages and dropped the handfuls of leaflets in the village streets. And
did they have any effect, as far as you know, or
Well, after a bit, I had a forced landing one day. My ignition failed on the engine. It came down, and I put it down in a glade in the forest. I was rather fortunate in finding one. In the hundreds of miles of forest and lakes, there was this one little patch of green. The Camel Down was a very soft swamp, but it landed very gently. And then I set off to walk back, and I tried to live off the land, but all I could find to eat were cranberries, and I ate those, and I began to feel a little bit weak, and instead of pushing through the forest, which was rather rough and had a tremendous sort of leaf mould to walk on with stones and rocks underneath, which made me feel I was going to sprain my ankles and get lost out there, I got onto a forest track, and there I met a batch of Russians wearing British uniforms and British khaki, and I thought they were some of our white Russian friends, but it turned out to be white Russians who discovered that the British and French were going to evacuate, and they decided to change sides and go south and join the Red Army. Well, the going was good, and so they took me along with them, and we went off and walked most of the way from there to Vologda through the forest.
Did you eat more regularly with them?
Yes, they stopped at transit camps and odd little clusters of huts and places on the way across through the forest. And the diet there, most of the time, the food we got was lumps of fungus cut from trees and stewed up in a big copper pot. And sometimes a fish or two thrown in, all stewed up together. And then to ease it, we all stood round in a big circle and went up one at a time with a wooden spoon, dipped it in and took a spoonful of this mixture, which tasted like mushrooms. It wasn't bad at all to eat, and it seemed to have a goodness in it. We went round and round like that with each with a spoon until the pot was empty. And after that, the pot had to be cleaned and scoured and polished with sand until it was shining again.
Whose job was that?
Well, very often I had to do that job. But there was another thing. In some of these camps I came to, they made me understand that if I gave my parole, I could spend the evening with the local commandant at his house. And as we weren't at war with Russia, and there's no chance whatever of getting away from the through the forest there, I used to give my parole, and they'd take off the guards, and then I'd go with the commandant and sit down in his house, and his wife would provide us with a meal. The conversation was always very difficult, but it was a little break in the journey. And then sometime later on, the guards came back again, and then I again was a prisoner.
Did the guards watch you very vigilantly?
I remember when I first captured, they did so. We were near Lake Onega, just with within walking distance of the edge of the lake, and I knew where boats were moored on that lake, having seen them from the air. I thought if I could get away from the guards during the night, I'd get down to a boat and get away up the lake, which was 100 miles long, and we held the top end of it round Lake Bedvezhegora. But every time I opened my eye during the night, there was one guard sitting, staring straight at me with his rifle across his knees, while the other one slept. And later on this walk, they got a horse which they shared between them, but I always had to walk. I wore the soles of my shoes out during that walk down from Lake Onega to Vologda.
What happened when you reached Vologda?
I stayed there for a time at Vologda in company with about 70 Russian officers who were being held prisoner there. I was there about a month, I think. During that month it began to freeze hard. And then at the end of the month I went to Moscow by train. And as I reached Moscow, the snow began. It was snowing hard when I walked through the Red Square, past St. Basil's Cathedral. And then I got in touch then, or rather I was taken to a group of English officers, British officers, I should say. Some of them were RAF, and they'd force-landed all around the fringe of Russia. The others had been on liaison duties with the Russian army, but they'd all been rounded up and put together. At first they'd been on parole, but the senior officer, Colonel Andrews, objected to the armed guards that were put on them. Said if they didn't take the armed guards away, he'd withdraw parole. They wouldn't take them away, he withdrew parole, and so we were all locked up in the Butyrka Terma, a prison not very far from the Lubyanka. And I went there, we were in a room, we got together, and there was a stove, and I think we occasionally got some wood to burn in it. But then one day the Russian guards came and took Colonel van der Spey, who'd force-landed somewhere near Archangel on a flight across in the direction of Siberia, and been captured, and me, and three others. The five of us were taken away to another building, put in single cells, until we were hostages. These single cells had no heating. They got double glazing. They had an iron basket bed frame sticking out from the wall. And we were lucky in being given large sacks of straw and canvas sheets by some prisoners who were on the way out. And so we slept reasonably comfortably in the basic bedding material like that, although it was bitterly cold outside. Straw and the canvas kept us warm. Well then,
what did you do during the day, during your waking hours?
Well, to begin with, we wrote letters and sent messages to everybody we could think of, like Lenin and Trotsky and the prison commandant. And the result of all this was they allowed us to have our cell doors open for 12 hours a day, so we could visit one another. And we made up cards, playing cards, played cards. The British Padre in Moscow, Mr. North, and he was left free, and he was the sort of unofficial contact with the Foreign Office between the Russians and England. And he also collected potatoes out in the country, and his wife boiled them up, and he sent in bags of cold boiled potatoes to us to supplement our ration of rye bread. He wasn't allowed to write us letters or send any messages, but he could write a list of the contents of his parcel. So instead of a list of the contents, he used to send a message in a written form that looked like a list. But then we discovered that the Russian prisoners, some of these hardened criminals, ran a gambling den. they got the warders to lock them in for the night. And then in the early morning they'd be taken out again and put back in their proper cells. We thought that Colonel Van Despay was the cleverest man amongst us, and he also spoke Russian, and we suggested that he should be locked in this gambling den for the night, see what could happen. We gave him our money, we bribed the warders with the soup, which we couldn't eat, and they locked him in. The next morning he came back again, his pockets were stuffed with paper money that he'd won during the night gambling with the Russians, and the money wasn't any good to us, but we had another thought about this, and we got him locked in for another night there, bribing the warders, and he went in again, and this time he got in touch with some of these Russian criminals and said that we wanted to escape, if they would help us to escape, and could take us over the Russian-Polish frontier, the British ambassador in Warsaw would pay them a large sum. We didn't specify how much, but we said he'd be very pleased to get five English pilots back again, and they'd give them a lot of money. Well, this was the one thing they wanted more than anything else, was to get money and credit in a country outside Russia. As money was no good in Russia itself. So this was all fixed up like that, and again Colonel Van Despay came back and was like put in his cell, and chatted to him about this. Well, it seemed as if there'd been an informer amongst these Russian criminals, because a night or two later some guards came to me and woke me up, said, "Lieutenant Stewart, you must come with us to the Lubyanka for questioning." Well, I told them my name wasn't Lieutenant Stewart and had no intention of going to the Lubyanka. Apparently they woke up Lieutenant Stewart and called him Lieutenant Sykes, and he said exactly the same. So the guards went away to get further instructions, but they never came back. And a day or two later we got a parcel in from Mr. North, and the message on the piece of paper said, "The British government holding Lenin and Trotsky responsible for your safety." Possibly that had something to do with it, because a few days later they came to us and said, "You are no longer hostages, you are prisoners of war on parole. You can leave the prison now and go across Moscow and live in the monastery on the other side, where all the others are now living."
How did you get over to the monastery?
Over the prison warders took us down through all the iron gates to the main doors of the prison. And they, outside there was a Red Army post, and outside was deep snow everywhere. So we said, "We can't walk all the way across Moscow, the tubes are worn out, we're not walking in the snow, we want the droskies, or a Russian type of taxi, a horse with a sledge behind it." They laughed at us, but these Russian Red Guards got hold of a couple of droskies from somewhere, but the drivers refused to drive us until they'd seen the money. "The prisoners haven't any money, we're not going to drive you across there unless you can pay for it." And then Van Despay produced his pockets of paper money, and we jumped in the sledges and got away as the Red Guards came running out to try and find out where we'd got all our money from. I should have said that we had a little trial run. The Russian prisoners were going to steal a government car. There were some big cars that had been used by the British during the war, and they were now controlled by the Bolsheviks, but these Russians said they could pinch one of those, and with their help we could get out of the prison. In fact, we did have a dummy run. I got out into the street and got back again. There was deep snow outside and no food. And we decided we'd leave everything until after the snow had melted from the roads. And then we'd have our run in comfort to the frontier. But it wasn't to be. We went to this monastery, and later we were exchanged for some prisoners who had been held in London. And they were sent to Sweden, I think, and we went into Finland.
By train?
We went by train. It took about a week from Moscow up to Leningrad by train, and then up to the Finnish frontier, We had to walk some distance across a frozen river. The railway lines had been pulled up, and so I went to Finland, where there was plenty of food and comfort and warmth. The one thing happened, I came with the first party, Landis Bay and Mr. North and others came with the second party. When they got to the frontier, the Russians called Mr. North back again. And he said, "Mr. North, there's some formality you've got to go through. Will you come back here to the post?" And so Landis Bay and Andrews, although they'd been told to go on, all went back with him, and everybody in the party went back. And they said, "Mr. North goes over first. We're all staying till he goes over." They all felt convinced that the Russians would try some trick to keep him back again, because he'd been a thorn in their side all through the period they'd left him free in Moscow. He'd been holding services regularly in the English church there and getting food for the prisoners, which was an offence under Russian law. Anyhow, he came over first, they came with him.
When you got back to England, was there a sort of hero's welcome from the government for you?
No, there certainly wasn't. I got a very shabby uniform by that time. And when we landed at Southampton, my brother turned up to welcome me, and so I said, "I'll come back with you to Cheltenham, where I got a new uniform waiting for me at home." But the others all went straight up to London, and as they reported to the Air Ministry, they were demobilised on the spot. We were given a month's leave, I think, but demobilisation...